On this episode of The Edge Podcast, Maggie Lauer, Chief Marketing Officer at TrueBlue, joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery for an in-depth conversation on what it means to be a corporate athlete, the explosive opportunity in the recruitment industry, the transformation of the CMO role, and so much more. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO from ClearEdge Marketing, and I am thrilled to have as my guest today on the Edge podcast, Maggie Lauer, the Chief Marketing Officer for TrueBlue. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you.
You've been in your role for just under a year, but you and I actually met when we were together working at Aon. So basically, Aon was a client of ClearEdge, and you were a marketing executive there. So I have to ask you, what attracted you to the role in the company, in the industry? In particular, what's interesting to me is there are a few CMOs now within our space who actually did not come from recruitment and joined, such as Gordon Burns, who's a CMO with Bullhorn, Jonathan Beamer with Monster, just as two examples. What was it about the recruitment space that attracted you, and why TrueBlue?
You know, there's a couple things, actually. And I would say, one, from a macroeconomic perspective, I mean, the growth in this industry that's projected is significant. It's quickly becoming a $1 trillion industry and opportunity. So that part of it, obviously, was interesting. Not that it was necessarily on my radar, but as I started talking to people and doing some of my own research, the growth in this space is fascinating, and it's very fragmented. So the idea that you could come in and think about how to bring some of that fragmentation together was exciting. The thing that really sold it for me, though, was meeting the executive team here and hearing their vision. So you mentioned Patrick. He was the president and COO as I was being recruited. He's now the CEO. And I spent a lot of time with him in the process, and I spoke with him and then the entire executive team over a period of a few months. And there was so much alignment around his vision, and there was so much commitment to having marketing in place to do it. So I think there are a lot of different ways to structure a marketing endeavor. What impressed me about Patrick was, while they'd never had a CMO before, he inherently understood that in order for marketing to make the headway it would need to, it has to be an executive level position. So it was an opportunity to come and build a marketing culture where there hasn't been one, to work for somebody who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, and the industry at large is really fascinating. I actually really come to love the staffing industry.
I really believe there's no better place to be right now with the convergence of talent, which every company needs, and technology. Mm-hmm. It's, to me, the hottest opportunity on the market. I am a little biased, having been in the industry about 20 years, but that being said, you are in an interesting position coming in. TrueBlue obviously has multiple brands, some of which were acquired, such as PeopleScout, mm-hmm. and being rolled into the TrueBlue kind of family of companies. How do you balance your priorities in the CMO role or structure marketing across the company?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning. I think I'm still figuring that out. We have four brands. We have our parent company brand, which is TrueBlue, but we have staffing solutions across the spectrum. So from, you know, white-labeled recruitment process outsourcing solutions and PeopleScout to our people management business, which is a portfolio of businesses that do on-site workforce management, to PeopleReady, which is our B2C on-demand business, which is, you know, bricks and mortar. I think for me, what's been the biggest learning curve has probably been the B2C branch-based business, just mm-hmm. because that piece was new and also a big part of the draw to come here. I should have mentioned that. The opportunity to move from that B2B2C mindset all the way to B2C was mm-hmm. too attractive to overlook. And I think that business in particular is in the middle of a sea change. They themselves did a brand change a couple of years ago mm-hmm. that was preceded by the TrueBlue brand change. So, you know, I'd say that we're starting at the top and trying to make sure that that value prop and the way that we communicate to the market is consistent at the top, and then we're weaving that into the culture. But it's a process that'll take time.
Right. So that's exciting because you obviously the companies and different brands have a great reputation, mm-hmm. being one of the largest players in the space, knowing that you're taking a close lens to marketing and how it's structured is exciting, which means there will be great things to come even more out of the company. So with that, something I'm extraordinarily passionate about is internal communications. And I often feel like companies, especially within our industry, often undervalue the importance of it and don't necessarily see how it can impact from a quite frankly, across the board of recruiting. So it could be retention, it could be engagement, and looking at turnover numbers and how it impacts that. You recently, so coming on board, as you mentioned, there was a big change within the company, a longstanding history with the past CEO, Steve Cooper, and bringing Patrick through from president named CEO as well as on the board. So looking at that change management early joining the company, I know you and your team executed a really strong external and internal change management communication plan, but perhaps you could share what the company believes of internal communications and maybe your own passion behind it and where you see the value falls and how much importance you put into it.
So, you know, I would say that internal communications, to me, marketing and comms, it is two spokes of the same wheel. So, you know, I place the importance of communications on an equal footing with marketing. I don't think one works well without the other, but you have to continue and always kind of strike for that balance, that healthy tension, which I think is productive and I think it's useful. I've been extremely fortunate. You mentioned that I came from Aon. I have worked with some of, I think, the best communicators in the industry. So I've learned from them. Hopefully they've learned a thing or two from me. And we've had these amazing relationships whereby I think even my appreciation for internal communications has been informed by working with people that were just so good at their craft. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that was really important to me was getting the right person in that role here, which we've just done. He's, you know, maybe 5 weeks into the role.
Right.
But the reason that that hire was one of the most important that I'll make this year, and they're all important, but this one was really important to me because to me, internal communications is how you manage the dialogue you have with your company. And so to not have a really thoughtful approach to that that's tightly coordinated with how you're speaking to the market is a huge miss. So you can't speak to your internal community differently than you do the external market and expect people to believe you. And I think one of the things that's really brilliant about Patrick's approach, he's very much a straight shooter. He's very plain spoken, and I mean that in the best possible way. He is going to tell you what the state of the state is, and he's going to help give you tools for how to think about it. And I think from a marketing and communication standpoint, that's not always the case. He's been fantastic to collaborate with. He innately understands how important comms is and how important it is to really be consistent with not only your tone, but with just being in front of people regularly. So we're trying some things that are new, I think, that push everybody outside of their comfort zone, and we're getting really good feedback on that. And I think it's establishing a different way of thinking about sort of that relationship between our executives and the company at large. People here are, I think, unified by one thing, which is that they're passionate about connecting people with work. That's why it's our sort of tagline, if you will.
Sure.
So tapping into that would be, not tapping into that would be a huge miss. We are a purpose-driven culture here. So keeping that top of mind is critical.
Right. Well, and the direct impact or correlation between sites like Glassdoor and reviews, external reviews now, are directly reflected from how people feel internally. So if they're leaving the company or even joining the company or working at the company for a long time, that experience that they have in working with you internally now can be a direct impact negatively on your brand if you don't properly manage that. So again,
Absolutely. To
me, it's just a smart idea to invest in that. So I'm happy to hear you have someone new on board with that as well. And Maggie, I have to say, one of the things I love about working with you, as I look at you as a marketing leader, you have a really strong voice within the companies you work. And what I mean by that is, while you wear a CMO hat, you're seen as someone who is fluid across the C-suite. So for example, you work and partner with various elements within the company, different people you advise, and they really turn to and look to you as a confidant within the space and what you're doing. So how do you, I guess, if you look at this, navigate political water, so to speak? You have a way of being able to communicate kind of challenging things, but someone has to say it, whether it's to the CEO, the CIO, the board. You need to advise and counsel them on that. And then how, I guess, for others, so how you've been able to do that and position yourself as that leader within being a CMO, and how you would advise other marketers kind of rising up the ranks and looking at their roles. How did you get to this place?
Gosh, that's a big question.
It's very loaded.
It's a very loaded question, yes. But it's a great question. And I'm gonna lean into some people who I'm really inspired by. And one of those is a gentleman named Scott Davis. He's the co-founder of Profit, which is a local brand agency here, and he wrote a book called The Shift. So I'm not going to tell you anything right now that you probably haven't heard before, but one of the things he really advocates for, and I had my entire team read that book in my last couple of roles, is that if you want to be highly effective and respected in a marketing role, you better know how to have conversations outside of the functional role of marketing. And so I would say for me, professionally, I've followed my own path. I don't think anybody would have looked at my career trajectory and, you know, proposed that, you know, 15 years from now, she's definitely going to be a CMO. There are different points of time where they probably would have said, she's going to be an equity analyst, or she's going to be in client service operations, or maybe she's going to run a P&L. All of those things weave together this tapestry of experience that I think really helps me have diverse conversations. We just came out of a leadership meeting a few weeks ago, and I'm working on something with every single member of the executive committee. And I don't think that's just because I'm a marketing leader. I think it's because I've also been brought in to drive digital transformation. Mm-hmm. And so that rests with every seat around the executive table. And so for me, it's a risky way in some ways to navigate your career. I've selected roles based on what I could grow from. So any job that was proposed to me that felt sort of different than the path I thought I was on, if I thought I could grow from it, that was really important. And if I thought I was going to go and work for somebody who was going to sponsor me and who was going to be personally invested in me, sometimes that outweighed what the content of the job was. So if I could learn from the person in the role, if it was somebody I really respected and admired from a leadership perspective, and it was something that was going to stretch me, as much as that scared me, it also excited me. So I think I think there's a lot of thought leadership being written about this now, that the CMO isn't going to get to be just the CMO anymore.
Right.
But there's so much more that's going into that role, because you sort of own the brand, but your job is to have everybody take ownership in the brand. And, you know, I think with the merging of the CIO and the CMO roles, at least from an investment perspective, I think you're always going to need both of those roles. But those two roles have to be highly, highly collaborative, which I'm fortunate to have that here. I have an incredible CTO that I work with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people aren't just going to get to be purists in their roles anymore. I think you really have to have a more diverse background. I was fortunate also to be at Bank of America at a time when they had a very forward-thinking perspective on that, which was they were raising corporate athletes. Hmm. You know, and that's something that I often get called, and I'm proud of it. I think there are probably people that don't know what to do with that, but I'm very proud of my background as a corporate athlete.
Right. I like that analogy. That's great. And I would concur with you on the business front. If you, first of all, you put yourself in a succession seat, so you're constantly looking at who can I not only learn from, but what other roles or what things can I take on as I'm growing and learning within my career. So protecting yourself and being your own champion is something we always talk about when it comes to ARA, the group I co-founded for attracting, retaining, and advancing women in technology. You have to be your own champion first. The second thing is, it's interesting you brought up the business conversation, because we'll get that often in conversations with people. Like, you really stand out because you get our business. You know our business inside and out. You have the mindset of the client, the consultant, the salesperson, the recruiter. You understand the business fully, which a lot of marketers do not take on. They kind of put themselves in a specific role. Mm-hmm. So we often advise, there's been a few people who we've talked to about taking on P&L responsibility, really looking at what is it that they want to do growth-wise. Is it a COO or not? CEO, president, whatever it is, they don't have to feel pigeonholed within a certain segment because that's what they studied or that's what they've done their entire career. So I think that's great advice, Maggie. Speaking of which, when you look at, you brought up the role of the CIO and technology, we also partner on a technology survey where CIOs having a seat at the table. And, you know, there's CIO was the fastest growing role for many, many years. And the chief digital officer came along. Mm-hmm. Well, then CTO. And then it was, well, what's the difference between the two? And really, what role will the CTO have? And will it surpass? So there's always this kind of, in looking at, you know, well, who's the C-suite, what's the role, and who's going to take over what. Then you had the chief digital officer, which actually came in results-wise as even faster growing than the role of the CIO ever was over the span of the years when that was first created. Recently, as you know, I was on a panel, a CMO panel for Executive Forum, and a hot topic of that was a converging of the roles of CMO and technology, in particular when it relates to digital and analytics. those happen to be really strong suits of yours as well. I know that's a passion. I think you said earlier, geeking out or something analytics and that. So I have to say, just looking at technology and how it really is powering the recruitment industry and the talent industry in general, and how we interact with clients and candidates and just operate as a company, I guess, how do you partner so well with IT? And how do you make that work for you? Again, trying to break down those barriers. At the end of the day, we all have the same intention, which is to do well for the company we're working for and be a career champion and be successful, happy, and so forth. But there's often this kind of infighting of who owns which budget, who's doing what. No, I own this. I'm accountable for that. How do you navigate past that and really make it work and partner? You seem to have accomplished that. How have you done that?
I mean, I think that the person with the C in their title sets the tone. So I think the CIO, CTO, and the CMO set the tone for how that relationship's going to work. And I would say the person who I'm fortunate to work with has a very collaborative mindset, innately understands marketing, has worked in some fast-growing brands, has worked on building some of the biggest mm-hmm. brands in America. So her perspective on it is incredibly aligned around, you know, the mutual destiny that we share. So to be honest, I feel like I'm fortunate because I haven't had battles. It's been more, how do we do this and how do we do this quickly? I view both of us as really having a lot of responsibility for leading that digital transformation. I mean, it was in my job description when I came in. Marketer alone can't lead a digital transformation. Right. You have to get a lot of people around the table. But, you know, I'd say as a partnership, the two of us, and I'm speaking of Carol McCluskey, really focus on what creates the most good. Mm-hmm. You know, so how do these two things come together to create the most good? And so I think just that bias sets the tone for how that's going to work with your teams. If you're not setting that example as leaders, how do you expect your team to get along? I mean, you're giving them permission to fight. And that just it slows us down. It doesn't actually get us to better solutions. So let's be in an environment where we're going to actually help each other identify what's wrong faster. And rather than spending a lot of time assigning blame, let's just fix it and move forward so we can go faster. And so that part is, I feel very fortunate. I don't have those types of battles. I have a great partner.
You are very fortunate, I will say. And the thing is, like, for those listening to the podcast and potentially have challenges internally, it does start at the C-suite. The person with the C in the title sets the tone. I love mm-hmm. that. And really, there's no time for anything else other than to work together. So why would you want anything else? It's only going to hurt you and the company. Which means you all, again, are set up for success, having that just digital transformation top of mind and partnering between all of the groups within your company is pretty fantastic. So speaking of a little bit on the technology front and shifting gears, thinking top of mind here, JobStack, and a little bit about what you're doing and looking at as a company. This particular week, I'm headed to Dallas for SIA's Gig Economy, and I'll be on a panel with heads of talent acquisition and so forth for Southwest and Home Depot. And one of the things that we're talking about is building your brand as a gig economy employer. And again, knowing TrueBlue's focus, including JobStack, I'd just like your quick opinion here as it relates to how you brand differently, if at all, between contingents opposed to employees. And how can we, in today's day and age where people are getting outreach and communication from everyone, so if it's not Home Depot or Southwest directly, it's multiple staffing companies, how can contingents, how can you get them to be your brand ambassador and really to love you and refer their friends to you?
So the simple answer, which isn't simple to execute, is you have to make it easy. I think the only way that you can get people to advocate for your brand is to make it really easy for them to advocate for your brand. So I'm just coming off of actually a conference last week where a lot of the focus was around having a digitally integrated experience. So if you have a connected experience that's consistent across web, across mobile, across email, that is actually going to be a big driver of how people evaluate working with you as a brand. So I don't think that that changes at the associate level, which is what we call the folks that we're fortunate to put to work. Right. So I think the concept holds true whether you're talking about customer acquisition or associate acquisition. Right. So for us, we knew that to be able to do that on scale, we were going to have a mobile app.
Right.
And so we've really invested, I would say resources, but also focus around getting that right for JobStack. Now, do we have the experience completely managed consistently across all of our platforms? No, that is an area that we're really focused on. That's an area that we're going to continue to focus on. You know, you're taking years and years of sort of institutional history and trying to make sure that while you're innovating, you don't break something.
Right.
So I think you do have to be really thoughtful in your approach to that. But I do think that mobile is going to be the most important way that you sort of set the tone. I mean, I just heard a stat last week that 80% of people are engaging through mobile now. 80%. I mean, that's staggering, right? I mean, we were still talking about laptops not even 8 years ago.
I know.
Right? And the pace of innovation is just so quick.
Right.
And so if you don't start to develop some muscle memory around being more agile, even if it hurts, even if it's tough, you are going to be the one that loses out. Because the brands that actually get this right, that actually have a consistent experience across their platforms, they are going to be the winners at the end of the day. They are going to be the ones that get share.
I agree. If you just think, and you mentioned this earlier, the thinking of the B2B and B2C converging as one and taking the experience you have as a consumer and really making sure the things that we feel are normal as a consumer are becoming what's important to keep an eye on trend-wise for the B2B side. So what associates, and I love the fact that you're using that word, thank you for that, associates have that experience with you, they're going to expect the same experience they have. So when you think about the leaders on the consumer side, Amazon driving a lot of voice-based recognition, cars now within your cars being able to just say an address and being directed to it. These are things that people are coming to expect. So the leaders within our industry will look at what can we do within technology and that experience with associates to make sure they're seeing that we're actually ahead of the game and make it as easy as possible and fluid as possible
for them. At the end of the day, we can't cut ourselves slack by saying, well, we're staffing or, well, we're B2B. Well, that doesn't hold true anymore. The people that use these phones, they're using it for managing other areas of their lives. And if we can't make that a simple, intuitive experience just because we don't want to invest at a level that a B2C brand would, nobody cares.
Right. Well, and that's
they want to make sure we're doing it.
They'll move on to the company.
That's right. That does it.
That does it. Mm-hmm. And that's who they will advocate.
That's right. So. And smaller startups are very interested in this industry as
right.
we have us now.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah. A lot of them. Okay, so on the topic of diversity, we're just going to switch gears here for a minute. Clearly, we're recording a podcast that features executive women in the recruitment industry. So you know how important it is to me just having worked together for a lot of years and all of the time and effort we put into mentoring and so forth for women in leadership, technology, and recruitment in our company as a whole. What I'd love to talk to you about is the importance of diversity, inclusion, and acceptance, what it means for you and for TrueBlue, and perhaps what you're doing as a company as it pertains to recruiting and retaining employees. Is it part of the DNA of the company, and what does that look like to you?
Yeah, so it's interesting because we did plan this a couple months ago, but interestingly enough, Saturday night, the National Association of Corporate Directors just named our company in the small corporate space a next generation leader around the topic of diversity and inclusion.
Nice.
So,
congratulations.
Thank you. It really is something that I think demonstrates the level of focus and commitment we have around diversity and inclusion. So what I would say is it starts at the board level. Our board is very diverse. We've been very focused on ensuring that we're getting a diversity of perspectives and on numerous fronts. So not everybody is from our industry. Not everybody has the same corporate background. You know, we have a good mix of men and women. We have a good mix of people of color and non-people of color. We have, you know, I think at our executive level, there are two of us on the executive team that are LGBT. I think that's also really important. Mm-hmm. As I was coming up in my career, I never saw a lesbian in a senior executive role. I think that's been a really important element that we've introduced to the culture here. So I think that you can look at the top of the house here all the way down to the VP level, and you can see where we're really trying to influence this from the top down. We have 40% of women, 40% of our VPs at this point are women. That is not
the case. That's unheard of.
Yeah, that would not have been the case if you'd asked us 5 years ago. So there's a level of commitment to it here. And again, I'll say this, it starts with the board, but it also starts with Patrick. I mean, mm-hmm. Patrick is very committed to diversity and inclusion. If you follow him on Twitter, if you follow him on social, you know, this isn't something he just talks about. He's passionately committed to it.
Right.
So, you know, as a leader that works with him around his vision and his value system, I mean, that's really invigorating to be surrounded by. And, you know, you can walk around our offices here and just realize in a anecdotal sampling that we're a pretty diverse company.
Right.
So that part of it is exciting.
That's fantastic. If you look at the industry as a whole, we actually did a study of the top 50 staffing companies. We took SIA's list and basically went online and found as much information as we could find mm-hmm. with boards and with the C-suite teams. And it's 73% of the companies have men in the C-suite compared to 27% with the numbers we got. So the fact that you have such a diverse organization speaks volumes to the company. There's a handful of them, and I would say in the last several months we've seen more and more women being announced to the C-suite. So it could be CEO or president level and so forth. But it's to your point, it's the board level here, mm-hmm. and it's setting the tone. That speaks volumes to what you're doing. So I would say to those listening to kind of watch out for TrueBlue, because not only diversity of thought, digital transformation, bringing in a CMO with a business mindset, investing in marketing and really taking the company to the next level. There's a lot of little hints that you're giving here today that says a lot about where the company is going. And with Patrick leading and having such a terrific team, there's great things to come.
Well, and one thing I'd like to mm-hmm. just say to that is that I would say that while all of that's great progress, I would say all of us are very dissatisfied with where it is. And so I think that drive to have it improve, mm-hmm. we actually spent a good portion of Patrick's last leadership meeting just on this topic and a good portion of our board meeting just on this topic. So not to speak in generalities, but I do think that it comes down to focus. Mm-hmm. I think D&I works when you're focused on it.
Right.
Right. It isn't just a programmatic institutionalization of having diverse candidates.
You're not checking a box.
No, we're not checking a box. And I'd say that we know there are areas we still have work to do, but we've seen where we've focused, it's worked. And
right.
so I think the one thing I would leave with is we don't have it all figured out, but I do think that we're really focused on trying to get it right.
Right. The thing is, companies can either check a box mm-hmm. and bring in training and say, oh, well, we offered training and did this. But the real, I believe the rubber hits the road is when you start recruiting talent in and they leave because it's an uncomfortable, unwelcoming work environment mm-hmm. and they're not in a situation. It was definitely smoke and mirrors as they came in. That's where you really get burned. And in this case, at least coming in, they know it really is a diverse organization. And while you may be working on fixing things, you're working on fixing things,
right.
which is a great step. You're not just trying to build a persona that isn't there.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, you have a family, two young kids, and a thriving career. Maggie, you travel a lot. Your schedule is a tough one to get on. And by the way, for those of you listening, it is a rare occasion. I think you and Joyce Russell from Adecco, maybe Andrea Wagner now with Monster, I think those are the only three, perhaps. Megan McCann, four out of every other week doing these we've had in person.
Oh,
so
wow.
Thank you for carving out the time to do
so
this
much more
in, person.
Fun in person.
I know, it's great. It's definitely more fun. And that said, you travel a lot and somehow you make your family a priority. And at least from the outside, I have to say, you make it look like it's without skipping a beat. Now listen, we all know the reality of that, myself included, that it isn't without sacrifice. And you do whatever you need to do to make it work. So that being said, how do you make this work? And, you know, how do you successfully integrate work and family without, I think I shared with you, I just published a post about the child's perspective on this. And it's really making sure you don't, it pains me to think that people feel guilty on one day, like, I was successful at work today, but I failed at home. Or today I was great at home, but I failed at work. What do you do, and what's your advice for people?
Gosh, so there's a couple things in there that I want to hit on. One thing that I think you and I share in common is we had extraordinary mothers.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom was a self-taught programmer in the late 70s. So she was a computer programmer in an industry where there weren't a lot of women, and really had to work her way up from a, you know, fairly junior role. And she translated that over a period of, you know, years into a very successful consulting practice. And I don't know that I always appreciated that coming up, but she always showed up for the stuff that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I decided I was going to go to prom 3 days before prom, she literally flew home from a client engagement and sewed me a dress,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's, so she's, you know, I...
She's present.
She was present when they need to be present. And I think that does matter. I think it isn't about quantity, it's about quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I've tried to learn from her, because she was also, and I know you and I also share this, was she was also very hard on herself, and she had, you know, three kids, and my older sister is quite a bit older than my brother and I, who were very close in age, and I had this amazing father who just wanted to see all of her talent come to fruition. So I was fortunate to kind of grow up into a house where work was important. Work wasn't something that you complained about. It was something that you valued. It was something that, you know, I saw it give my parents a lot of meaning. And so one thing I've really tried to imbue with my kids, I love what I do. I love what I do. So when Jasper, my 7-year-old, comes to me and he says, oh, traveling is hard. I said, yeah, but it's a really important part of my job and here's why I go. And so it's really trying to make sure they understand that, you know, working doesn't have to be something that's followed by this deep sigh, that it can be something that really invigorates you. And I think because of that, my kids grant me a bit wider berth. And I've expanded the time periods. I think I'm getting better at being kinder to myself about not getting it all right. I don't often get it all right in the space of a day. Sometimes it's about getting it all right over the course of a week, and sometimes it's about getting it all right over the course of a month. I think you've got to be really thoughtful with yourself about your time periods, because rarely do I get it right within a day. Rarely. It's you know, you just have to. It isn't about them being equal. It's about them being prioritized appropriately. And I think the moments that I'm with my kids, I really try to be present. I mean, I remember the world of Blackberries, and even with my wife, she would give me the put it down. And I think that's what we need, a partner to hold us accountable, or somebody in our life to hold us accountable. And so when I am with them, I really try to be with them. So it sounds sort of fairly intuitive, but I don't know that everybody that's doing this probably feels that way. I had children later in life. It wasn't an easy process, so I'm just so grateful to have them in the world. And so if I were to miss all of that, what was the point?
Right.
All of this serves a purpose for me to feel like I'm making a difference professionally, but I have to be making a difference at home too. It all has to work together.
Right. And it will. We talk about a lot the impact of the next generation and having them. Basically what you're doing is something I'm really trying hard to work on, which is flipping that conversation to the positive. Mm-hmm. So yes, travel can be tough, and while you may want to sigh and you come home completely exhausted, the second you walk in the door, you want to be present for them. So the way you talk to Jasper and switch that conversation is brilliant. I think we need to do that more often. And to your point of being happy, if you were raised in a family where everyone's miserable and no one's happy with work and what they're doing, what kind of tone does that set for others? And that's, to your point earlier, be your own career champion. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who just switched industries after being miserable for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And we sat down and I was like, this is your choice. You can take off that misery hat. Mm-hmm. But you have to put yourself out there to do that. And you don't want your family to see you that way. You don't want to feel that way.
Yeah.
So I love that. Thank you. Flipping the conversation, that's something I'm working very, very hard on. And hopefully those listening, we talk about this a lot. And Emily, who helps us with the podcast production, hears a lot of these stories. But making sure people rising up in their careers see that you can have a family and you can have a career, you can have both, and you really can have it all, but having it all will mean something different to you than what it means to me, than what it means to Emily, to anyone else listening. You just have to figure out what that is and do what's best for your family and not let anyone else judge or try to change that. Okay, so with that, we are at an end, but I'm going to put you on the spot and end with a little fun here,
okay?
Which always makes me kind of nervous because I never know what people are going to say, and we're in person, so I need to watch my expression when you tell me what it is. So tell us one thing, Maggie, that we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
Gosh, the one thing, although people that have probably spent a little bit of time around me wouldn't be surprised by this, but if I wasn't doing this, I would be in the wine industry. So I have traveled to wine regions all over the world. If you want to see me turn into a complete geek over wine, I can talk about soil types. I'll talk to you about terroir. Wow. I'm really, you know, I come from an agrarian background, so on both sides of my family, they have a farming background. And I think it's my way of channeling that prior generation, because nothing gets me more fired up than being on a vineyard. I love talking to the growers. I love talking to the winemakers. I love being in the process. So it's more than just the wine. I actually find the whole industry and the creation of wine to just be such a romantic, interesting, fascinating pursuit, and I never get sick of talking about it.
Oh, that's, I would not have guessed that, so thank you. And not because of not loving wine. So for sure, when we go out to have a drink, a glass of wine.
Really hard time going out to have a drink. I know, that's why.
Now I know who to lean on when we pass the menu around. But the beauty of that is you can give more insight than just guessing on a bottle, which is what I do. So I'll love to learn from you on that front. All right, Maggie, how can people get in touch with you? Whether that be LinkedIn, Twitter, email, what's the best way to reach you?
You know, I would say that the best way to reach me would probably, I am very diligent about LinkedIn and about Twitter. And so I would say those are probably the two best. Email is not great. Email is just, I get so much email and there's so much of it that's noise that it's, to me, that's part of my day is just managing my email. But I do actively go out and look at both of those channels regularly. So at Maggie M. Lauer, or my LinkedIn profile is Maggie Lauer.
Excellent.
So those would be my two preferences.
All right. You heard it here first. Not email, LinkedIn, and Twitter. All right, Maggie, thank you so much for joining us
on
today's podcast.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.